This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri, and we are with Gigi Bradford. She's a poet and has been responsible for much of the central institutions for poetry in our country for during the last century. And she's not that old, but she has done that much. And you'll hear a poem right now from Gigi.
Thank you, Grace. It's a pleasure to be here. This poem is titled Why I Don't Want to Be a Poet. And I'm reading this first in case you don't like what comes next. I don't want to hold sorrow like a lover and lick its face for all to see. I don't want to show my scraped places, the knobby callus of my soul. At my age, the less you see, the better I look. I want instead a clean, pure line with just a hint of rhyme. I want images cut to crystal, ideas like pyres. A simple thing, really, to hold my heart to the fire.
And how ironic, because she may not want to be a poet, but she cannot help herself. Gigi Bradford. So in spite of yourself, you've given your life to that art. And I just want to read something to you, Gigi, and have you comment on it. And it is about your career. Gigi Bradford was the inaugural recipient of the Poets House Elizabeth Cray Award for Service to Literature. And this is why. She's directed the Academy of American Poets, director of the Folger Shakespeare Library Poetry Program, the NEA Literature Program, the NEA Heritage and Preservation Division, Millennium Projects, at the National Endowment for the Arts, and the Center for Arts and Culture, the first think tank for the arts. Actually, these are almost the first of all institutions. It was like you were there at the birth of the nation. I mean, the 80s, I knew you when you were the director of the Academy of American Poets in the 80s. So was that 40 years ago?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And since more than 40 years ago. But I wasn't there at the beginning of the Academy, Grace, but yeah, or at the beginning of the Folger Poetry Program. Those had both gone on before me.
But we're talking about sustainability.
Yeah.
We're talking about leadership. We're talking about maintenance. And you are responsible for that. A pioneer in the arts, I think. But more than that, a poet. So let's hear another poem before we go into your life.
Okay, thanks.
Are you scared?
Am I scared?
Of going into your life?
I don't know.
Maybe. Nothing to be ashamed of.
Nothing to be ashamed of. Okay. A lot to be grateful for.
Oh.
Okay, so this poem is called Practical Mathematics for Home Study. Think of an arch. Imagine one brick removed. Then think of the space the brick was in. What holds up the doorway? Many problems involve abstraction. Calculate how often an answer reflects the lowest common denominator. The idea of angle is simple. Do you want to live alone for the rest of your life?
Mm-hmm.
Enclosed parts are considered together, but both fraction and division can revert to their mean. When using negative numbers, an empty alcove can trigger formulas remembered by heart. Think again of an arch. Imagine one brick removed. Now try to solve the equation.
Gigi Bradford, that is your Ars Poetica. However did you contemplate into that poem? That is the most complicated poem of any of yours. But I want to say one thing. Every one of your poems we hear today has an argument at the center of it. Do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I will speak to that. For a long time, I wasn't writing much at all, not only because I was working and, raising a family and da 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 da, and very engaged in cultural politics and policy in this for the United States of America. But I was also not writing because I didn't want to immerse myself in a lyric, in lyrics all about myself. I became less interested in what we in a standard lyric, which is about the individual voice. And what has allowed me to break through somewhat, though not completely, is thinking about ideas and abstractions. Now, that you never get rid of the personal, but instead of using the I all the time, which there is some I in these poems, instead of using the first person personal, I wanted to write ideas. I find that much more interesting.
Oh, Gigi, no wonder you have are slow going because you are not settling for the utterance. You're not settling for even the melody phrase. These are very simple, complicated, accessible poems. We need an entire book of these. But I just wish I had an MRI of your brain while you were writing this one, because it looks like my grandson's pre-LSAT book. You know, where words are used as mathematical equations.
Yeah.
It is so precise. I really like this very, very much. She received her MFA in poetry from the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and Gigi has published poems and essays and edited books. She served on the board of the Emily Dickinson Museum for 12 years and is a founding chair of the Folger Poetry Board. And now another poem from Gigi Bradford. This is the poet, the poem from the Library of Congress.
So this poem, Grace, is called Not a Perfect Sphere. And I wrote it as an exercise when teaching at the Folger Shakespeare Library, teaching the course Shakespeare's Sisters. We taught this, we had this course for many years. Louisa Newlin, Terry Cross Davis, a number of us were teaching it. Kim Roberts, we taught it, because of we never heard about women poets during the Renaissance and early modern times. And so we taught it for free to high school students in the DMV. And we also did writing exercises. And so I wrote this poem as an exercise for that about, I don't know, 10 years ago. And then I've edited, of course, a little bit since then. It's called Not a Perfect Sphere. And it's about one of my very favorite foods, which is grapefruit. Every winter morning, rising in darkness, I cut a grapefruit to welcome the sun. Every winter morning, the halves are unequal. One side is higher than the other one. Who gets the wider half? Who eats the taller? Can I manage marriage before daylight's begun? Every winter morning, I slice into the question, can I make the imperfect second to none?
Once again, there is a question at the center of that poem, which is larger than the poem. And at the same time, the domesticity is enchanting because as a mother, you remember cutting those little edges, every one of those edges for your children, and it brings back a swath of memories. But not a perfect sphere is literally what you are always struggling with in all of your work, in making the ends meet and trying to understand what how our human existence factors into that. But I want to switch back to your work in the public sphere.
Speaking of
What,
spheres, yeah.
yeah, really,
Yeah.
what does it matter if we have institutions for poetry? So what? We'll all go on writing. I mean, you have been a pillar of central institutions in this national ones. So what? I mean, why do we need them now that they're being dismantled?
We need them enormously, Grace. We need them. We need an infrastructure to support culture in this country because it can't get out drip by drip, piece by piece. You know, we do a very different job in this country than they do in many others. We don't have ministry of cultures, ministries of culture. We have very much of a bottom-up system rather than a top-down system in this country, or we have had to date. And that's so American because rather than being coming down, dictates coming down from on high, we give the voice to the people. And the people, their voice rises up through. And so to have an organization like the Academy, which supports individual writers, like the Folger, supporting individual writers, and like the Arts Endowment, which still supports individual writers, and that's a miracle, but supports the organization that supports the writers and brings writers and readers together is absolutely essential. Think of the structure of a poem, okay? A poem requires the reader to meet the writer somewhere in the middle. It's not at all like reading a newspaper article, where if you and I read the same newspaper article and we get something different out of it, there's something wrong about the article, right? But with poetry, the writer needs the reader to meet them. And that's the great pleasure in a poem. You have to figure out what the writer's trying to say and bring your own version and intelligence to it. And that's this, it's the same with structured with support for culture in this country. We bring the public into supporting and acknowledging culture in a way that many other countries don't. If you have that diktat from on high, the public doesn't get the opportunity, and we don't have that system in this country. So it's important.
We will play your words again and again, and all of us will actively work every day to protect what we have built. And now, more poetry from Gigi.
Okay, another. These two go together, so I'm going to read them
Oh,
together.
please.
Is that good? Okay. I have a lot of family up in New England, and we spend time up there. And these have come from that landscape. The first one is called Peninsula. Hard to defend yourself surrounded by water. Hard to extend yourself except by dredging the unseen that flanks the unknown. Access from one way only, and even that blocked sometimes by weather or boats unmoored. One side is constant harbor, the other marsh, and the prevailing wind from the edge that's first dark.
Can we talk about that one before we go on?
You bet.
You
Sure.
can, because you start with a landscape, you start with a view, but then something else happens, and you turn that into a philosophical problem without losing the visual. So, of course, this is unconsciously done. You couldn't possibly, like a chess game. But are you aware of how you started with an observation and turned it into a comment on your human existence? I mean, are you know that, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was hoping for. I
Yeah.
mean, doesn't that make it more interesting to go beyond just description? I mean, description is great, you know. But to
If I
try
could teach my students to start with description, but to go into something more cunning and to have at the heart of it the feeling you had when you were a child looking at something, you know, that's quite an amalgam. To get back to that soft earth of when you were very innocent, which is in the poem, seeing what's before you, and then the grown-up commenting on that. Let's hear the next one from New England.
This one is called Island. No man and etc. But still isolate in winter when most decamp for cities kindled to simulate the sun. Here, light wheels from water that itself rises and falls like the great glad breath of the world. Nothing arrives without force, carried by gale or man to the ledge, sorting everything over there from what endures here. Singular, ingenious, separate, and spare.
That needs to be read very slowly and many times. The great glad breath of the world. Is it
Tides.
true?
The tides.
Is it true that nothing arrives without force in this world, even birth? Anything?
And of course, wind, tides, water, there's something is always in motion.
Just for fun, take each stanza and paraphrase it.
Okay.
Just for kindergarten.
No man and etc., but still isolate in winter when most decamp for cities kindled to simulate the sun. That, of course, it references John Donne, No Man is an Island. So that starts out with an idea, which sort of is the key to, okay, this isn't just going to be an ex a description. Plus, John Donne, I mean, one of my faves. He's
He's
so
an
wonderful.
up-and-coming poet.
Well, I don't know about that, but he's really, really good and influential.
But wait
So
a minute, that's interesting that you should bring him up because I think he's the father of wryness. And your poetry very much is in the, never occurred to me before this minute, very much in that bailiwick of irony, wryness, slant, meaning. Okay, so what does the second stanza mean?
here, light wheels from water that itself rises and falls like the great glad breath of the world. Nothing arrives without force. So that's what I was saying. This is a description of movement. Light wheels from water. And you know how light reflects off the ocean and the sea, and it wheels because of movement, as we move throughout the day. And the water that itself rises and falls like the great glad breath of the world is the tides. And it's so, when you're there and you're so aware of the tides every day, what's happening throughout the day, it's just it's part of your.
If you're a noticer, if you're a poet, many people watch them and do not see them, Gigi. But to notice thing is one of the tools of the poet. So now, what is your summary stanza?
So nothing arrives without force, carried by gale or man to the ledge, sorting everything over there from what endures here. Singular, ingenious, separate, and spare.
What were you seeing?
So what I was seeing there, see the first paragraph, the first stanza is really about, so this is about people who live on islands that are not just there in the summer. This is about a way of living that is separate from being on the mainland, whether it's an actual mainland or it's an emotional or intellectual
There we
mainland.
go.
That's what I was
There
hoping
we
for. But
go.
people get very different, when they live on islands, when you don't live in a city that's kindled to simulate the sun in the summer, in the winter. You're there. I mean, think how dark it is.
But look what you did with it. I mean, you're telling me the weather. Look what you did with the weather. I mean, that is what the poet does. And this is a wonderful poem to teach, I think, for that reason, to go from landscape to inquiry. And let's
So,
hear
Grace,
your
who
next.
wrote Inner and Outer Weather? That's the thing. Inner and Outer Weather. Who wrote
Oh
that?
yeah, everybody.
Everybody. So, but
That
that's sort of, where we are with this.
is a good parody. Okay, so let's hear another.
Okay, let's see. What's
Gigi
next?
Bradford is her name. She's very much connected to the Academy of American Poets, the Folger Shakespeare Library, Politics and Prose, and the Poet and the Poem.
Thanks, Grace. Okay, well, actually, this is also sort of a New England poem. Ospreys whistle like a kettle lifted sharply off the stove. Their curt calls boil like water calmed. Each angled wing scythes air with a great grace built to prey. Each tail unfurls like a fan. Hovering high above the marsh, raptors moored in flight, they labor air until they swoop and strike. Once below the water, their talons pierce flesh. They dip like swans a moment in their other element. Still, this poem is not a parable. To survive, ospreys consume each dimly seen, alive, quicksilver prize they can find.
Imagine a fish as a quicksilver prize. Let's go on. Another
Okay.
poem.
All right. Red wing. It's just an ordinary flight along a highway, almost incidental. I want nothing that hasn't been promised, though all the signs say yield. This season, even Nebraska seems gentle. Lambs, calves, foals, the most delicate, expectant blooms tremble when we pass. To a child, travel mimics insight, and belted between the windows, you point out what I barely see. Look, you say, look. And it's a blackbird wearing its heart on its sleeve.
Tell us about To a Child, Travel Mimics Insight.
Everything is so new. Everything is so new for kids. Right? And so to see something new is you're making a new connection that you've never made before. And so by putting the child in the poem, the child gives me the insight and makes the connection for me. And of course, you know, isn't that fabulous about family and children? They're teaching you. You know, you think you're teaching them, but it's really not really
Teaching.
the case.
Now people are getting a taste of your teaching. So take us through your teaching a bit. You've been a Politics and Prose, which is America's premier bookstore in Washington, for years teaching. What have you been teaching?
Oh gosh, Grace. So I started teaching at Politics and Prose. I left the offices and all those offices I'd been in. I got an infection in the hospital, and so I was very ill for a while, and that required me to stop working. And so when I, you know, recovered, yay, all recovered, I started teaching at Politics and Prose for something to keep me in poetry rather than working for other people. And it has been an enormous pleasure for me. I have taught there since 2006. I have taught over
20
55.
years.
I've taught, yeah, 55 different classes at
Oh,
Politics and
Gigi.
Prose. Never the same. I did repeat, I've repeated a couple of poets, but not the same class or the same component. It's been a gift to me.
Oh.
It's made me recognize. So, you know, we've talked about why I haven't been doing all that much writing. Think about music. There's a composer, there's a conductor, and there are musicians. And that's, if you go to the symphony, that's what you get. I think, so I've been struggling with not being the composer so much, although I am composing some, but I'm really the conductor. I'm the conductor in that equation. I seat myself as the conductor because I love to find, it took me years to figure this out, but it's the connections. The connections between ideas and images, I find just absolutely riveting. And how do you recognize how, well, John Donne, Marie Howe, Jane Hirschfield, Shakespeare's sonnets, Richard Wilbur, Anthony Heck, Reginald Dwayne Betts,
G.G. Bradford.
how do you figure out how those people say things in ways that other people don't?
But
And
doesn't
they,
each poet say something that no one else does?
yeah.
It's how. It's
And
how.
it's how. It's how they say it. And then you get to figure out how their mind works. It's just like, wow. And then how they get those images that makes the, how they make the images work with the thinking.
Which
I
is what we're
wonder.
doing with you today, because everyone's going to want to sign up for a course. They're going to be standing around the block at Politics and Prose. You
Okay,
once
the
in a
next one's
while.
Ilya Kominsky next month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can
Very
tell
good.
Carolyn that.
And so they can Google Politics and Prose in Washington, D.C. and sign up for Gigi. There's something, though, about teaching which is even more profound. And I actually sat in on one of your classes that happened to be on Zoom for some reason, whether it
Oh, they're
was
all on
Zoom.
Zoom now.
Oh,
Since
are they?
COVID, they're all on Zoom now.
Well, I expected a very animated discussion. Oh my God. This was on World War II poets. And it was the
World
socio,
War One poets,
yeah,
Grace.
excuse me, World
World War
War
One
II poets.
poets. Yeah, look, yeah.
And which is a really, I think, just actually has been an underserved area of literature and is now getting a little more light, thanks to you. But you did the sociological, the political, the historical, and it was like a PhD seminar. I
It
mean,
was
I was absolutely, I could not believe the level of discourse.
well, thanks. It was fun. I mean, World War One, those World War One poets, they're the hinge between the Georgians and then the moderns. Right after them comes T.S. Eliot. And he was so different from, Wilfred Owen or Siegfried Sassoon. Wow. And that shows us how the cultural upheaval of World War One, which was enormous, changed everything, including literature. Those men, oh, those
Even
men.
Robert Frost was a result of it.
Yeah.
I think since you are the conductor, and all of us who are presenters of poetry see ourselves as orchestrating other people, there's still a part that you may not let lie, the slender part of you that can so meticulously match the image to the idea. And so maybe you need to be a priority unto yourself now. I mean, as well, you can do it as well as teaching. You just have to get up in the middle of the night.
Thank
You just
you,
have to get
Grace.
up
Thank you.
earlier.
I appreciate this encouragement. I
No,
really do.
it's more than encouragement. I'm going to be a stern nanny with you because your work is remarkable. It's extraordinary. It's pristine. And I want to hear another poem. G.G. Bradford.
Right, I think I only have one more,
I
Grace.
think you have the Heaven of Lost Gloves.
But
And
where
I
did the
think you
Heaven of
have
Lost Gloves go?
and
Oh, I must have
Practical
looked.
Mathematics.
No, we did. We did Practical Mathematics,
Oh,
but
yeah, you did that.
I must have skipped over the Heaven of Lost Gloves. Oh, let's read that one. That's fun because, oh yeah, the Heaven of Lost Gloves. I skipped over it, I guess. I'm a big walker. I love to walk, and I'm lucky enough to live across the street from the grounds of the National Cathedral, the Cathedral Close. So I'm always walking, and this time of year, you're always seeing one glove. And I've always wondered, okay, what happens to the other? Where's the other glove? What are these poor little gloves, lonely gloves doing? So I wrote this poem, The Heaven of Lost Gloves. Eventually, they all arrive, solo, of course, the small fingerless mitts of the very young, then the softly lined, the worn, and your sleek leather numbers for town. Come late winter, grimy safety mitts shove their jobs down drains. And their stories? So alike, even the smallest, dropped in the street by a car, a gaping pocket, hurried twilight chores. Are there reunions? Of course. But things are rarely the same after one has gone missing while the other remains. Like scouting a graveyard to read rows of headstones, they can spend years trying to grasp what's absent, their sundered memories searching long echoing aisles of the lost.
You have to read a lot of poetry to say sundering, echoing, lost. You have to read a lot of poetry because that has to be in the DNA. That just doesn't come from the head up. So do you know the last time we were on air, I foresee, if I can expand time magically, I foresee a series of conversations between Grace and Gigi about poetry.
Oh, that would be fun.
Nothing would animate me more. And the last time you were on, we were at 7th and H Street at WPFW on the second floor, and you were about to enter babies into your family. Now, how old are those babies?
Oh, my God. Okay. 41 and 36.
It has not, I think it's long overdue, Gigi.
I have granddaughters now.
And who doesn't? And this all began on WPFW, your conversation about babies. So we have a lot to catch up on, and it would be my pleasure to be with you all the time and another time. And now a closing poem.
Closing poem. The One Road. Most beloved of the missing, you are long gone down the old road, coattails flapping. I can see your back, but not your face. All my losses trail you, through strewn leaves, through last light, through cold coming. I know there is only one road. Most beloved, someday soon you will turn and seek my face.
The voice of Gigi Bradford, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MAT Studios. We wish to thank the library for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund, the Rivada Foundation, Friends of the Program, Natalie Canivore, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.